The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Meanwhile, in the NBA, Philadelphia 76ers All-Star Ben Simmons is likely to miss the rest of the season, sources tell ESPN. Simmons will have a loose body removed from his left knee in the coming days. The team announced that on Saturday. The loose body was suffered in Wednesday's victory over the Washington Wizards. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid left yesterday's 76ers loss with an ankle injury. Stephen A., talk to me. How much pressure here is now on Embiid that he won't have Simmons the rest of the way?
I think immense pressure. Immense pressure. It's not about them winning the Eastern Conference or anything like that. It's about showing up and reminding the world that you're one of the greatest players on the planet and arguably the best big man in basketball this side of Giannis Antetokounmpo. You got to be like a man. You got to play like a man amongst boys. That's what you got to do if you're Joel Embiid. That was a freak injury that took place. That could happen to anybody. We understand that. But assuming that he's healthy enough to perform without Ben Simmons on the court with him, you're the lone resident star on this team. Tobias Harris can ball, Shake Milton can ball, Josh Richardson can ball. We get all of that. We understand Al Horford's a veteran. We understand that. But this team is Embiid's team, especially now more than ever that Ben Simmons is not there. You got to show up and go out and go down swinging. It's not about y'all winning because y'all ain't going to win. You shouldn't have let go. You shouldn't have let Jimmy Butler get away to Miami. You shouldn't have moved J.J. Redick to New Orleans. But you did that, and as a result, you ain't coming out of the East. But what you can do is get your big behind in the post, drop step in the paint, demand the damn basketball, and go there like a man and take cats out. You should be averaging 30, a minimum 30, and about 15 rebounds a game. You should be Shaq-like, dare I say. I'm talking about being a man. I'm talking about reminding everybody that, excuse me, you just ain't another one of the guys. I'm 7'1". I'm 260. I got great footwork. I got a touch from the perimeter. I do know how to play with my back to the basket when I'm committed to it. I can hit free throws. I'm a man amongst boys. Give me the damn ball. That's what I'm saying Joel Embiid has to do. It ain't about winning. I don't think you're beating Boston, Toronto, or Milwaukee, or even Miami, and probably not Indiana. But what you got to do is let everybody know it wasn't because of him. It wasn't his fault. It's the rest of those dudes around him, or it's the coach. It ain't Joel Embiid. That's the pressure he's on.
We're not going to learn anything new about Embiid that way, Stephen A. Embiid has always had health issues, really, that I think have forced him to self-load manage because they don't seem to have a plan for him. So he didn't play as well on the road. The team didn't function as well on the road. But we've seen what he's capable of at his best. He's an absolute monster. Like, what can't he do? And so, you know, more of the same from Embiid. Probably he won't put up Shaq numbers because who put up Shaq numbers but Shaq? But he'll put up Embiid numbers, which are, as you mentioned, better than any bigs except for the Freak or AD, if you consider AD a big. He is a rim-protecting four at the very least. No, that's not the issue. It's not like does Embiid now has more pressure to do anything. Stephen A., they may not have had enough shooting to win the championship anyway or even get out of the East. Recently, it didn't look like it. But because of Embiid and Simmons together, each whose talents are pitched just about at MVP level. Like, they haven't produced MVP seasons, but that's where their talents are. And Ben Simmons was having an all-world defensive season, probably the defensive player of the year. And with the emergence of Shake Milton, now could play the four, which also allowed Embiid and Horford not to have to share the floor because apparently they can't coexist on the floor together. Like, that doesn't work for some reason. Horford can't play the four. Who knew? But the point is, now that Simmons isn't there, they don't have a chance. Whatever you say, well, they probably weren't going to win the East anyway, we would all acknowledge you can't sleep on them. Like, you can't just discount them because of Simmons and Embiid. Without Simmons, you can discount them. The expectations are not that they maybe not even advance in the Eastern Conference, right? Certainly not that they're going to contend for the Eastern, even to make the Eastern Conference Finals without Ben Simmons. So does that elevate the pressure? Or does that release pressure? It releases pressure, Stephen A. Whatever flaws you think are on the team, in the post-mortem, if they don't make it and Simmons is healthy, invariably there will be criticism of Embiid. His game will be picked apart and people will find where it's not perfect and blame him. Now, he's playing with house money. Anything good that happens will accrue to him. And anything bad that happens, the season was lost anyway.
You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong for one profound reason that even you can't argue, although you'll try just for television purposes. And that is this. His motor. We've questioned that in the past. You too. Even though there have been times, obviously, injury have played the role. There have been other times where he just doesn't have that motor. When we think about the Greek Freak and what he brings in, we've seen him be drop over 30 on the Greek Freak in the Milwaukee Bucks. We've seen him talk smack to others and then go and give it to them. There are times when it's about injuries, and there are other times where it's simply about motivation or lack thereof. And he's got to step up and make sure that that is not an issue that is ever broached in this bubble because Ben Simmons is gone. He has to want it. And I remember, and one of the things that I want to emphasize is we understand that basketball is a team sport, Max. We understand that. And we understand that results matter. But there's also individual things that transpire. Damian Lillard just showed that the other day. He misses the two free throws. But Patrick Beverley's mocking him. Paul George is mocking him. Dame responds the way that he did. And he said, what did he say? Now, he's not an I kind of guy. He's a team player. I'm not. This is a compliment. But he said, I sent that dude home years ago. I sent you home last year. That's what he said, because at some point with basketball, it does come down to you. And it's separate and apart from the other issues.
In the words of my man Roy Jones Jr., y'all must have forgot. Like, it does come down to who wins for Embiid. And now that Simmons is there, he's not expecting to win, because you brought up the Freak. For every monster game that the Freak has had on Embiid and the Sixers, Embiid has had that same monster game against the Bucks. The difference is the Bucks are perceived this season to be Eastern Conference finalists at least, and the Sixers were perceived to have a shot, meaning the pressure's on Embiid. And now that Simmons is not there, they are not perceived to have a shot. Embiid will have his monster game, including against the Bucks. He always has.
And what if he doesn't? Yeah. And what if he doesn't? We'll be talking about him, not the Sixers. We'll be talking about him.
No question. I'll leave you guys with this. Embiid and Simmons have combined to play in 465 games together. They've also had 375 DMPs. Philly's got to figure this out. And Max, I'm glad you brought up Roy Jones Jr. People keep asking me, what do Max and Stephen A. think about Tyson Roy Jones Jr.? We got to talk about that at some point when they have that exhibition fight coming up.
I'm very
worried. Inquiring minds want to know.
Worried.
Yeah, we got to discuss that as a later date.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The college commissioners of the Power Five conferences held an emergency meeting last night over concerns about fall sports, including college football, during the coronavirus pandemic. Sources have told ESPN that over the past 48 hours, the postponement or cancellation of the football season seems inevitable. On that note, I bring in longtime friend and host of College Game Day, the one and only Reese Davis. Reese, always good to see you. I need you to educate me here, because last week the big news seemed to be that UConn canceled their football season. I know a lot of that was financial, and I think I'm the only person in the national media that actually cared about it. And the rest of the story was that the other conferences, like the Big Ten, were going full steam ahead. Now, fast forward less than a week later, and we're on the brink of cancellation. Is it lawsuits, Reese? How did we get here?
I asked that same question last night, Molly, actually over the last 2 days to probably close to 10 administrators from different places across the country. I said, why the about face? 2 days ago, we meaning college football as a whole, schedules were being released. And now all of a sudden, cancellation seems to be the number one topic. I didn't get a satisfactory answer on that because I'm not sure anyone knows the definitive answer as to why that has become the case. Here's what seems to be the consensus. The conferences like the Big Ten and the Big 12, who were starting a little bit earlier, now are up against a place where their players were going into pads. What type of danger would that present, if any heightened risk? They've been able to keep their players, for the most part, the Power 5 level and what I guess would best be described as a quasi-bubble. Some students are starting to come back to campus, and the time frame has been a little condensed for those conferences who wanted to start in early September. The SEC, I think Pac-12 had a little bit longer runway, though the Pac-12 had some other extenuating circumstances that gives them problems. And that seems to be what has caused some of the presidents to get a little nervous about going on with the season. It's the fact that if they're going to have the season, they're going to start it in early September, first or second weekend, then they have to start practicing pads. And they're not sure that they're really ready to do that. There are a multitude of other issues, but if I did that, I would take up the rest of the time on the show. So at least for the top level, that seems to be the consensus among the people I talk to.
It's inexcusable as far as I'm concerned. College football deserves to be canceled. It's just an absolute disgrace. And it hurts me to say that because I love college football and I love so many people associated with college football. But I abhor its leadership because they have none. Now, if you were the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, anybody else, and all you ever played was within your conference, then it would make more sense. But the fact that you know you compete outside your conference as well, to not have a game plan, something close to being universal, is just is inept and is inexcusable as it comes. This stuff has been going on since the year began. It really, really hit another level in February and, of course, early March once the NBA was canceled on March 11th. You've had all of these months and they still don't have any kind of safety protocols or measures or what have you in place. And so to me, it deserves its comeuppance. As far as I'm concerned, there needs to be something done to force and provoke leadership to ultimately be provided to the sport of college football and college basketball, I might add as well. It's just an absolute disgrace. There's no excuse for it. And as far as I'm concerned, they're getting exactly what they deserve. In the end, however, again, let's also understand what the colleges are doing here. If you don't have the students on campus, but the student athletes were to come on campus and play, then it enhances their employment status. And obviously, they would be thinking along the lines of compensation. In order for college sports to hold on to amateurism, per se, they got to make sure that the students are on campus as well as the student athletes. But you still don't have definitive safety measures and protocols in place. This stuff is embarrassing and inexcusable. And it's unfortunate that great guys like yourself, Reese, and others that love the sport, that do an exceptional job covering the sport, have to be subjected to this level of ineptitude that ultimately will cost this sport its season. I think it's inevitable that this sport is going to be canceled probably within the next 48 hours.
Well, a few things, Stephen A. For the first time, I am pessimistic about the possibility of playing the season, and that's a new position for me, and it's only happened over the last couple of days. I would differ with you on a couple of your points. One, first of all, I do agree with you about the leadership at the highest levels. The NCAA has been missing in terms of the leadership that they've given to college football. I would say, however, that I think that that many of the conferences, the Power Five conferences, have done a pretty good job in terms of committing resources and to testing, to creating the best bubble they can. I agree with you completely that just players on campus certainly enhances the idea and takes away the notion that they are just like every other student. They generate billions of dollars. We know that's not the case. But it's safer. Right now, and I'm intimately familiar with several programs, not only in football but others, in the way that they've implemented quasi-bubbles and the protocols that they are getting their players to follow. At least according to the guidelines that medical professionals have given all of us, I can't imagine them being in better situations in terms of limiting their risk. We can't eliminate the risk. No one can do that in society. But I think that the conferences and the schools and the medical professionals there have done a pretty good job. Does it eliminate the risk? Of course
I'm
not.
I'm not talking about the schools.
We know the long-term implications.
I'm talking about an overview.
We don't know yet. Yeah.
Right.
No,
yeah,
right.
I didn't mean to apply that about individual schools. I was just talking about the overhead, yeah.
Yeah. Leadership has been lacking, in terms of the NCAA in this, for sure. There's no question about that.
Reese, I know you told Sports Illustrated a while back about your own experience as a parent with a son who played college sports at a very high level, Division I, and had a health scare on the field of play, and how that gave you a new kind of appreciation for taking ownership of your kind of career, so to speak, as a college athlete. What do you think of that said? What do you think of the fact that the players had to kind of stage this unity thing where they're asking the people who are supposed to be in charge to act like adults, to at least give them a set of consistent protocols? As a parent of an athlete at that level and who experienced that, what's your feeling about that?
I think it's well within their rights, and it's something they should have asked for. Sort of going along with what I said to Stephen A., I do think that there are a number of schools and conferences who are behaving that way and who are protecting the medical rights of the players as best they can. But I also think it is wise for the players to ask for third-party oversight. There is nothing, if you or I got sick, Max, we would not hesitate if we got a diagnosis to go and get a second opinion. And I think that having an unaffiliated medical board oversee the protocols that are being followed is well within reason and actually is quite wise and is something that if we are to try to proceed in any way with sports, that it's probably a very wise thing to consider and to try to implement for to protect the players as best we can.
Such a complicated issue, so many layers. Reese, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your perspective. We'll talk to you soon. Stay safe.
All right, Molly.
When we come back,
see you guys. Thanks.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
In 1 month from today, Thursday, September 10th, the Chiefs and Texans are scheduled to open the NFL season. Tom Brady is back on the field with a new team for the first time in 2 decades. Brett Favre telling USA Today Sports that Brady picked the worst possible timing to switch teams with the coronavirus pandemic and restrictions that come along with it. Quote, "For a guy like Tom Brady, you got to be scratching your head. Of all the times to change teams, he's got to be saying, how am I going to get the chemistry I'm wanting to have with the guys, with my new teammates, with everything that's limiting us getting ready for the season?" I mean, I think it's fair to note that the Bucks have created a voluntary bubble situation, so he could stay in that team hotel if he wanted to. And look who's here. Dan Orlovsky, I haven't seen you in a minute. Big timing us. I know you're a host of NFL Live now and all those big things.
Here we go.
Max, I will I'll ask you first. Who entered
Dan,
the
just
season
remember,
under
be
more
good to the people on the way up? Because in the words of Art Carney on The Honeymooners, you're going to meet the same people on the way down.
Oh, goodness. I appreciate that. Way to lift me up as we start this segment, bud.
True. Sometimes you're picking the grapes. Sometimes you're drinking the wine. We all know what it is. We've all been on both sides. All right, Max, talk to me. Who's under more pressure? Is it Tom Brady or is it Cam Newton?
It's a trick question. Of course it's Tom Brady. All the things that Tom Brady has to go through, Cam Newton has to do the same thing. And he's in a new situation. Only the difference is Cam Newton's coming off injury. Only another difference is he's not joining a team with offensive weapons everywhere you look. Only another difference is, in fact, even if Tom Brady had stayed, there'd have been people this year who said, Buffalo almost got him. They're on the way up. It's not the case for Tom Brady. Yes, the Saints are a powerhouse, absolutely. But Brady is expected to make the playoffs come hell or high water. Do you see all the offensive weapons he has? He has an excellent coach. They have an underrated defense. And everywhere you look, there's a weapon. Oh, yeah. And his security blanket came out of retirement to join him down there. There's much more pressure on Tom Brady this year than there is Cam Newton for all those reasons. In addition, the most pressure on anyone in New England is on Bill Belichick, because one of the, at this point, age-old stories, real questions, sports debates is, was it more Brady or more Belichick? And largely this year, that's what people will be looking to see. Fair or unfair, Brady left the cupboard bare for Belichick. Fair or unfair, Brady's old now and he has to learn a new system. They both have excuses, reasons why they might do well, might not do well. But the story is comparing Brady and Belichick right now. Brady's under more pressure.
I disagree with you. I definitely get where you're coming from about Brady. I can't argue with those things. But what I could tell you is that, you know what, Brady is approaching the swan song of his career. He's got an elite squad, which I've talked about with Evans and Godwin and Gronk and Brait and O.J. Howard. And now you got Shady McCoy added to the backfield. I get all of that. So the multitude of weapons that he has available to him is a reason to apply that pressure. I totally agree. But we got some serious questions about whether or not Cam Newton is going to have a career if he does not succeed in New England. Now, I personally believe he was screwed over by the Carolina Panthers. I don't think enough has been made about that story, considering his greatness for that organization. The 9 years that he served there, for them to treat him the way that they did, letting him go as late as they did, that was my issue with the Carolina Panthers. And then to have all-time great players polled, and you know, you conduct this poll as a team, and Cam Newton isn't even included in the question, is ultimately ridiculous. We get all of that. But in the end, you got, there's some serious question marks about him and what he has left in him, because 5 of the last 6 years, he hasn't even completed 50% of his passes. 60%, I apologize. He hasn't completed 60% of his passes. Now, the last full season he had, where he played about 14 games, he completed 67.9% of his passes with North Turner as his offensive coordinator. But we still look at Cam Newton. We question his ability to throw the football accurately. And now, despite the freak athlete that he is, we're questioning his ability to continue to run and to be the athlete that he is because of the amount of punishment his body has absorbed over the years. We all know that on his worst day, he's more mobile than Tom Brady ever was. And as a result, if you're Josh McDaniel and you're Bill Belichick, you might be able to do some things with that, and the offense could be more versatile because of it. With Sony Michel and James White out of the backfield, Lacoste obviously elected not to play, so you've got Julian Edelman, Mohamed Sanu, and N'Keal Harry. They are not Evans and Godwin. We get all of that. But the flip side to it is that there are no real questions about Tom Brady other than age and attrition. They may be significant, but that's all you're really questioning right now. With Cam Newton at age 31, we're questioning if he doesn't survive here in New England or prosper, who's going to even want him? I think more pressure is on him.
Dan?
This isn't even close. It's Tom Brady. 5 reasons why. First of all, Tom Brady chose to leave New England, where Cam Newton was forced out of Carolina. So just that simple aspect of Tom Brady betting on himself puts more pressure on him. Second of all, you guys have all mentioned the people around the respective quarterbacks. Not only does Tom Brady walk into a situation where he's got a top 6 receiver in Mike Evans, 2 top probably 10 or 11 guys, if you add Godwin, Hall of Famer Gronk, but like Cam's got no one. Like Cam is a very kind of deprived skill level or skill players around him. And then they have 7 or 8 opt-outs, a ton of them on the defensive end. Like, there's a huge burden that's going to be placed on Cam Newton, where Tom Brady, because here's the thing, guys, football at the end of the day, it's a team game. but it becomes my guys are better than your guys. And Tom Brady just has a ton better guys. So, you know, that there is that expectation. Three is going to be the expectations. Tampa Bay is expected to be deep into the NFC playoffs, potentially NFC champions and making a Super Bowl run. That's from the people who, like, you know, really kind of take a deep dive into the football world. A lot of people don't have high expectations of New England this year. They didn't before Cam went there, and they won't now that there's been a ton of opt-outs. But I think two of the main points are the last time we saw both of these players healthy, right? 2018, halfway through the season, when Cam Newton was healthy before the hit by TJ Watt, he's an MVP candidate. He's having one of his best seasons. He's accounting for 19 touchdowns and 5 picks, right? Last year when we saw Tom Brady healthy, a lot of people said he was having a down year. A lot of people, maybe somebody on this panel right now, have suggested that he's not a good player anymore. So the last time we saw both of these guys healthy, one was performing at an MVP level, and one was performing at a level that people were starting to doubt if he could still play. So the pressure is on the guy that people are doubting. And the last one is this.
Hold on.
If Tom Brady goes and wins in Tampa Bay, he'll be the reason that they win in Tampa Bay and go to the playoffs and Super Bowl. If Cam Newton goes and win and they win in New England, he'll be just a piece because they have done it for
That's
such
the point.
Because
right,
of the way
on.
Bill Belichick operates his stuff.
Hold on.
The pressure's Tom Brady.
Let me play devil's advocate here to both you, Max, and Dan, and Max, follow up. I just want to be clear on this. So Tom Brady has 6 rings. Cam has none. Tom Brady's married to Giselle and just signed a deal for $50 million guaranteed. Cam just got on a team with 8 players opting out, the most in the league, is making $1 million, has a 1-year deal. We don't even know if he'll have a career after. Yet we're saying that Tom Brady's under pressure. Is that what you're arguing?
Well, you're right. You're right. Molly, you can always bring up the financial component of it and say, in fact, in the real world, how they're experiencing it internally, Cam Newton is under more pressure. I couldn't argue that. You're right. One guy's playing for his future and livelihood and the other guy's all set. But I'm talking about the story that will be told about this season. Like the pressure in terms of where the media focus is going to be. Everything Dan said is right on the money. The bottom line is, even with all the opt-outs and everything, if Cam can't get it done in New England, people aren't going to be talking about Cam. They're going to be talking about Belichick. Hey, Belichick, we don't want to hear all these excuses. Somehow, correct, no matter what, you always got it done with Tom Brady. Meantime, if Tom Brady can't get it done in Tampa, a lot of people will say, well, look, you can't really talk about the age because people like Dan, Stephen A., and others were saying, no, if you put weapons around Brady, he'll be fine. He really wasn't bad. He's still really, really good. He has an excellent coach. He has weapons everywhere he looks. The real emphasis of the story that we will tell will be comparing Brady to Belichick, much less about Cam Newton.
And Molly, I'd say this, like, it comes to the money, yeah, Cam's got a lot to prove. He certainly has a lot to prove, but the pressure's all over Tom Brady. I mean, Tampa Bay made their investment. This is an offense that fell in passing last year. And so they've made that investment with expectations of X. The Patriots financially took a flyer on Cam Newton. They didn't have a lot to – they didn't invest a ton in him. So if it works out and he plays well, they're going to look like geniuses. I would say this. The pressure comparison between Tom and Cam's not even close. And I think there's two players in the NFL that bear the most pressure this season. One's Tom Brady, the other's Dak Prescott. Tom Brady's got as much pressure as anybody in the NFL this season because of those things that I laid out. I think he's up for the challenge.
I throw Lamar Jackson in there,
too. I think he's going to meet that, absolutely. But he got a ton of pressure on him, and it's not even close between him and Cam Newton.
Well, listen. Well, the question isn't who has pressure, because we know it's Cam, it's Dak, it's Lamar Jackson. It's a few players. We get all of that. But the reason why I stand by my position about Cam having more, I think Cam's career is on the line. Tom Brady chooses to play. Tom Brady wants to play. Tom Brady wants to show that he could still play, that, you know what, being 43 years of age, he just turned 43 last week, you know what, it's not over for him. Okay, that's fine. That's your personal question. because you're a six-time champion and the GOAT. We look at you. We're very, very interested in that storyline, particularly with the weapons that you have available to you. But in the end, you got a global pandemic going on, et cetera, et cetera. So you could always sit up there and struggle this year to some degree for some reason, and we'll still want to see what you have a year later. Cam Newton don't have 2 years. Cam Newton might not have 2 months. He's playing for Bill Belichick here. And oh, by the way, you both have been on national television in front of the cameras talking about how Cam sort of adds pressure to himself because of his attitude, his body language, his demeanor, how he looks on the bench, stuff like this. So all of those things taken into consideration. You trying to tell me that everybody's just going to look at Belichick only? Nobody's going to sit up there and look at Cam, you know, hairdo, ass cough and all, or whatever.
If Cam falls flat,
they're
going
to look at the players.
We're not going to look at Cam Newton and say, hold on. I listen to both of y'all. Nobody's going to sit up there and look at Cam. And say,
he'll get another shot.
Excuse me, what about you, Cam? What about you? Nobody's going to do that?
No, because I'm going to look at his players around him and go, they don't have a lot of help. I'm going to look at the defense that's been decimated by free agency and then some opt-outs. Their defense took a big drop off. I'm going to look at their offensive line.
Tom Brady's a made man. Please, miss me with this foolishness.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to First Take. In day one of our First Take NFL Primetime Players, we asked all our ESPN experts to rank the top 15 best players in the NFL right now at this moment. We begin with number 15 in the trivia question that I read to you before the break. Here's the deal, y'all. Which player has recorded a whopping 49 sacks, the most of any player in the NFL over that span? Who could it be? And the answer is...
The 15th player on our First Take NFL Primetime Players ranking is Chandler Jones.
That's a huge impact play by Chandler Jones.
The Arizona defense end has recorded at least 10 sacks in 5 straight seasons, the longest active streak in the NFL.
Under pressure, down he goes. That one belongs to Chandler Jones.
Last season, Jones became the first player since Hall of Famer Reggie White in 1986 to record multiple games of 4 or more sacks in a single season.
It's a sack for Chandler Jones.
Player number 15, Cardinals defensive end Chandler Jones.
Max, I know the Cardinals finished last in the NFC West, and that's a loaded division, but they were scoring at a ridiculous rate last season. Are Chandler Jones and the Cards actually playoff contenders this upcoming season?
Contenders, yes, you have to say they are. And Chandler Jones is a monster, but he has a crime partner now in Isaiah Simmons, who, by the way, was probably the prototypical modern defender in this draft. Versatile and definitely blue chip. And then they even got that tackle, the big tackle, who slipped to them in like the third round. Josh Jones slipped to them in the third round. It's like, what? So you have help on the offensive line, where obviously Kyler Murray has DeAndre Hopkins. That's really the big news. So obviously you're expecting an improved offense that was already excellent, but also a really high impact defensive player to add to that whole thing, and a high impact lineman who like people were surprised was even available. And then you even look more at the team, Molly, at the mix of I mentioned some of the young talent and veterans and Larry Fitzgerald and all these guys. They have a chance to be really good. And we know in the NFL, especially when a young quarterback has that year under his belt, fortunes can change very quickly. It's not like a baseball where they have to bring guys up through the farm system. It takes 3 or 4 years. If you have a quarterback in place and you have things clicking in certain respects one season, just like that, you can go from, 5-10-1 to 10-5-1 or 10-6, whatever, in one season. And I expect something like that for Arizona. Very tough division. I would say the toughest in the NFL. So I don't know that they actually make the playoffs, but they will contend.
Please, they ain't contending. I'm sorry. I see Arizona as third place or last place. That's the best you can do. Seattle, San Francisco, and the Los Angeles Rams are in their division, and they're going to contend. Contend for what? For what exactly? I mean, please. There's nothing to think about here. I like Kyler Murray a lot. He's got tremendous promise, completed 64% of his passes last year, 20 touchdowns, just 12 interceptions, 3,700 yards passing. I give the brother props. You acquired DeAndre Hopkins. We know what a stud he is. And Larry Fitzgerald is that age-old veteran who'll be in the Hall of Fame someday because of how well that he has played. I got all of that, but there's still some question marks at the running back position. I know you got Kenyon Drake. I'm not sure about him and how he's going to do this year. I'm certainly not sure about their defense, and primarily I'm not sure because of the level of competition that they're going up against. It's not that they're scrubs. It's not that they can't play. I'm not trying to disrespect them by any stretch of the imagination, although I have my questions about Mr. Cliff Kingsbury, all right? The only reason why he's made any news is that fly crib that he had on draft night. Outside of that, that's it. And even when you saw the fly crib, it always,
The
crib was off the chain, no doubt about it. I'd like to see it. I'd like to know where it's located. I might want something like that. I understand that. It was a fly crib. We get all of that. But this is a guy that never deserved the job to begin with because his resume on a collegiate level says that he deserved like a 40-35 record, never competed for a national championship or anything like that. In 6 years, you barely knew who he was. You still are flummoxed as to why he got the damn head coaching job in Arizona. So he's a question mark. That defense is a question mark. And a level of competition within their own division, those 6 games that they have on their schedule, are a huge question mark. They ain't contending. The Arizona Cardinals can play. They got some nice players on that squad, some big-time players like DeAndre Hopkins. I believe in Kyler Murray. Please don't get me wrong. But this early in his career with that team in that division, hell no. They are not contending. Contending for last place. That's about it.
All I'll say is this. That's the toughest division in football. I hear what you're saying. It's not going to be easy. I'm not predicting they will make the playoffs. But a lot of your kind of perception of them is based on your perception of the quarterback because he's very young. But he showed enormous upside. Kingsbury had the offense humming. But Kyler Murray showed enormous upside. And Stephen A., I would not be a bit surprised if by if they had a season and they could actually complete it and everything, by the conclusion of the season, we were sitting here listing the quarterbacks in the NFC West saying Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson one, Kyler Murray nipping at his heels above the other two, like above Garoppolo, above Goff. That wouldn't surprise me.
Well,
especially not throwing to DeAndre.
I mean, stop the presses, Max. I mean, I'm ready to fall off my chair. You really stepped down on a limb there, Max Kellerman. Kyler Murray might be better than Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, just stop the presses.
Those
I'm about to catch a heart attack. I mean, really? They all right? Yeah.
Jared Goff was in the MVP
Jared
conversation.
Goff was really good a few years
two-thirds
ago.
Two-thirds of the way through the season
year.
A couple years ago. Jimmy Garoppolo had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
That's right.
It's like the best winning percentage of any starting quarterback ever.
All right, Stephen A.'s unimpressed. You know this.
Please.
You set yourself up for that, Max. You know Stephen A.'s unimpressed with that one.
Please.
Oh, my goodness. All right, you guys. If they're going to do anything, they're going to have to win the wild card. We all know that.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast.
We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Draymond Green was fined $50,000 for tampering by the NBA for comments he made about the Sun star Devin Booker while serving as a TNT analyst during Friday's broadcast. Dre said that Booker needs to get out of Phoenix and go somewhere he can play great basketball all of the time and win. I do want to point out the Phoenix Suns. I know that Booker's really the only bright spot, obviously, except bringing in Monty Williams as well. But they are undefeated in the bubble, so I got to put that out there. Our girl, Chinee Ogumike, here with us. Chinee, so good to see you. It has been way too long. We'll get to you in just a moment. Stephen A., you're up first. Do you agree with Dre here? Should Booker leave the Suns?
Well, first of all, major congrats to both my colleagues. All the best to both of y'all doing what I know y'all are going to do on radio. That's number one. Number two, I don't think that Draymond Green was right to say what he said. First of all, why are you costing yourself $50,000 because you're commenting on where another player in the league needs to leave, or another player in the league needs to leave a certain organization? A lot of us feel that way. I feel that way, but it ain't costing me $50,000. Dre, keep your money, bro. You ain't Steph. All right, you don't have a $200 million deal. You got $100 million. You ain't got a $200 million deal. Rich Paul did a good job with your contract, but still in all, bottom line is keep that money, bro. That's number one, even though you're doing a good job. Damn good job on TNT with what he's doing. But here's the number two reason I don't feel I agree with Draymond on this. I felt this way months ago before Monty Williams arrived. And Monty Williams could coach. And this is a guy that's class personified, knows what the hell he's doing. And they're building something there. Now, Luka is Luka. He's special in Dallas. And Trae Young has been special in Atlanta, even though they're a struggling franchise. DeAndre Ayton is not bad. He's not a scrub. And if you watch them play in this bubble, he's got some promise. And if you got him and you got Booker, considering the youth on the squad, with Monty coaching them, I think they could potentially do some things, which is some of the things that we have seen in this bubble. So I think those are the kind of things that you could pay attention to. I'm not saying that I wouldn't love to see him in a Knicks uniform or anything like that because I'm a New York Knicks fan. But I'm just saying in terms of what they're trying to build, the hiring of Monty Williams goes a long way to me, a long way with me. And that's why I say we don't necessarily need to be saying that about Booker anymore. Whereas before Monty Williams arrived, I damn sure felt that way.
Now, I want to leave you some time. And I basically, Stephen A. and I agree about this. Booker is showing that he is a really special player. Like, you know, a lot of times you got a guy who can score like that and everyone loves him, but when you look closely, you go, he needs at least another dude at least as good as him to win a championship, at least. And Sarver, Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, has been such a disaster that you understand, like, for example, how'd you like T.J. Warren on this team right now instead of giving him away for a ham sandwich, right? And they've made a million moves like that. It's a terrible organization. But right now, something special is going on. You can't deny it. DeAndre Ayton, whose defense has come a ways even, is a guy with some upside, which is why he was drafted where he was. And right now may not be the time to make that point about Devin Booker. But, Chinee, I don't want to suck up all the time here. There's not a lot.
Yeah, you're right. I think that the Phoenix Suns have made a number of mistakes, but Devin Booker is definitely not one. Everyone wants Devin Booker on their team, clearly, but I disagree with Draymond that Devin Booker should leave the Suns. First, Devin Booker is under contract, I believe, until 2024, which means his hard work has literally paid off. He's the highest paid player in franchise history. And usually a lot of those players are like, I'm good. I can be patient with this process. Also, we all know that he idolizes Kobe Bryant, and Kobe played for one team his whole career. But really now what we're seeing is his true potential individually. He's a bucket from three. He can get to the rim. But that third facet of his game, the mid-range, has been solid in the bubble. Before the bubble, I think he was shooting around 44% mid-range. In the bubble, he's shooting 57% mid-range. So that's what he worked on in the break. But what I love the most is that he is not just a bucket getter anymore. in this small sample size, he's a winner. Someone you want to see with the ball in his hands
right.
at the end of the game. So I get how everyone wants him on his team, but most importantly, he is now finding his own potential, and so is the rest of his squad. It starts with Monty Williams, that scrappy defense. You know, great coaches get their players not just to play on offense, but also on defense. So yeah, Devin Booker, I think he's good where he's at. But most importantly, I want to say thank you guys for the radio love, because I'm the rookie in this situation and you guys are the vets. So I'm going to lean on you two, not just on the court when it comes to analytics, but also in the radio. So I'm just following in your shoes.
You're going to crush it. It's much deserved. Real quick, Chiney, because we don't have you on here often. Tell me this.
I'm your
leader. What stood out to you most in the bubble?
T.J. Warren. I mean, this is a guy
right.
with a huge chip on his shoulder and what he's been able to do, not only finishing at the rim at 6'8", but now he's showing he can knock it down from three. He's must-watch basketball, and that's what I love about the bubble. That's the beauty of the bubble. The ballers are really showing out, and T.J. Warren is one of them.
Right.
I would say him as well, but
I would also add the Portland Trail Blazers as a team. The Portland Trail Blazers as a team, because if they get in, the first round is going to be incredibly interesting, more interesting than we originally thought.
Yeah.
I hope they get in.
T.J. Warren is a feel-good story, but Lillard is scary.
All right. Chinee Ogumike, Mike Golic Jr., 4-7 on ESPN Radio Daily. Max Kellerman, 2-4 on ESPN Radio Daily. That all starts August 17th. Chinee, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. We'll see you all in the morning. Have a great day.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.